Today is March 18th, 2017, and we're live here for the next 2 hours. Ladies and gentlemen, I can't tell you, we're having a lot of fun. Before the show starts, we're getting set up, prepping and all that, and there's just so much information going by, and a lot of things happening in the month of March, and things that have already happened, and things that are going to happen in April. It's just going crazy, it's getting faster all the time. Because of that, today I'm going to switch up the show a little bit. I'm going to put one thing in front of the other, just to make sure I get it straight. I'm still working it out, getting a nice smooth transition from one segment to another, but we've got a lot going on, and I'll tell you what helps me out a lot, and that is my CEFCO coffee. I get a cup of CEFCO premium coffee, extra large, every morning before I go to work and when I come here to the show. You may be seeing it in some of the clips on my YouTube channel, but there's my CEFCO coffee, and the reason I say that is it's about the only place I can go to get good tasting coffee that's consistently tasting the same and doesn't cost me $5. So anyway, I got mine from Hilltop CEFCO right here in Cameron. Go grab yours today. Go get the paper. Go get a pack of cigarettes, a bag of chips, whatever you need. CEFCO, Hilltop Cameron. And they got some great coffee there. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a lot going on the show. Let me give you a quick highlight of what's happening today. Of course, as always, we're going to do our NRA stories. We're going to do three of those with my commentary after each one. We're going to be doing our license to carry, or for your old school people, your concealed handgun. So license to carry is equivalent to conceal a handgun. It's just a lot of people still have their old licenses that says conceal a handgun law, but it's all the same thing. And we're going to be going over penal codes 30-06, 30-07, signage, and everything in between. And right after that, after the break, we're going to have a special guest on in our attorney lawyer segment. I'm going to have attorney Benton Ross Watson on to discuss and review penal codes 30-06 and 30-07 and other important laws and laws that are potentially coming up that we need to look at, check on, and refuse somehow or some way, if, you know, because I'm looking at them here and I don't like them. So we're going to be talking about that. Today on the topic of interest segment, I'm going to tell you all about what's coming up in this month, in the remaining part of the month, and coming into April. Today's product spotlight is from our sponsor, ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer. We'll be talking about the Taurus Public Defender with the polymer frame. Now, I don't normally say this, but ladies, this is a great gun for you, and I'm going to explain in its segment, but it's an excellent gun. It's an excellent gun for anybody who doesn't practice. If you've got to carry a gun and you don't practice, and to ensure you're going to get the hit, you need to listen to me when I talk to you about this gun. As always, the voice of law enforcement will be on today, Officer Randy Dixon. The walking encyclopedia of good information and plain old common sense will be on right about the 11 o'clock hour. Today's gun training demo is going to be places to conceal on the body. We'll be talking about women and men, and we're going to get personal. We're going to be talking about our bodies and where we can put stuff. We got a lot going on. And with that, I'm going to get right into it. Let's get right into our NRA segment. Now, if you've been a faithful listener, which I know you have been, you're going to realize that I don't normally do the NRA segment first. That's how we're going to start. But let me give out the numbers here. If you want to be part of the show today, here on The Ranch, 105.1 FM The Ranch, the number here to call the studio is 254-697-6633. You can give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or go directly to the website aaronsgunshop.com. Now, please, give us a call. There's a lot of information, especially with our attorney section here. All you licensed to carry people or people who are thinking about getting a license, you need to give us a call, ask some questions, be a part of the show. If you want to support the program, show up to events. Give us calls into the studio. Like me on Facebook. Donate money. Become a sponsor. If you like the show, spread the word. But it doesn't stay on in the air by itself. It needs the support of you, and hopefully we're providing good information that deems it where you feel you can do that. Now, let's go on to the NRA section. And in this section, I'm going to read to you three stories from the NRA's Armed Citizens page of the American Rifleman. And hopefully, from these true stories, we can learn what to do and what not to do, and maybe even get a laugh or two in the process. So here we go. This one is from March 2017. And the first one is: family ties run deep in Robinson, Texas, where a man defended his mother-in-law during an armed robbery. While the woman was chatting on the phone with her daughter one day, two armed intruders kicked in the door of her home. The woman's daughter, who lives across the street, you'd think she'd just walk over and say hi, you know, but I guess she just,
really old.
I'm surprised she didn't text her. Okay. The woman's daughter, who lives across the street, told her husband of the commotion on the other end of the line. He then grabbed a shotgun and bolted across the street.
There he found his mother-in-law had been forced into a back room and had a gun pointed at her. He exchanged gunfire with the two bad guys, striking one fatally in the chest. The other fled. The armed citizen faces no charges. My commentary on that story. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a great story for a bunch of reasons. Let me tell you why I think so, and here's number one. The man in this story defended his mother-in-law. Now, we've all heard the bad raps when it comes to mother-in-laws, okay? So to defend her anyways is a huge plus. Now, you know, of course, I'm kidding, but you hear all the bad things about, oh, it's my mother-in-law, so on and so forth. But he bolts over there to defend his mother-in-law. Two, the daughter listening to the commotion on the phone had her wits about her and relayed the info to her husband. Very good. Number three, her husband, after receiving the information, did not delay in retrieving a weapon and racing to his mother-in-law's aid. Four, the husband bravely exchanged gunfire with the bad guys and got one in the chest while the other fled. Now, here's my little bonus. Mother-in-law, I believe, owes son-in-law a peach cobbler or something. So that was a good job on that one. Let's go to story number two. Emergency dispatchers heard gunshots during a 9/11 call as a Florida man who was reporting an intrusion had to defend himself. The homeowner saw a vehicle enter the driveway of his Willoughby Isles home. Three men exited the car and two of the assailants hopped a fence leading to the caller's backyard. The resident grabbed and loaded his shotgun and called 911. He told dispatchers that the bad guys had a brick and were trying to break a window. Then he fired several times as one of the intruders entered the home. The wounded man died and his accomplices fled. The armed citizen will not face charges. Oh, gosh, I hope not. My commentary on story number two. The homeowner observed, assesses the situation, and determined the necessary action. That is, arm himself and call 911. Well, since seconds count and police are only minutes away, the homeowner stopped the threat from continuing. So I say, good job, old man. Way to go. Story number three. Philadelphia auto repair shop owner learned the value of being prepared. One evening, a suspect attempted to rob the store. The owner responded by pulling his firearm, shooting the assailant in the shoulder, chest, and buttocks. The alleged robber fled and was later arrested and taken to a hospital. My commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, the auto shop owner refused to be a victim. He was prepared. You too have a choice. Do you want to be a victim or do you wish to be prepared? Smart money says be prepared. So there you have three stories, three true stories of how people responded to certain situations. And we can study them and learn from them. And hopefully, God forbid, if it ever happens to us, we'll be more prepared to handle the situation better. So these are great stories. If you're not a member of the NRA, I highly suggest you become one. I know. A lot of people don't like it. But the numbers help protect our rights. So become an NRA. Once again, the number here to the studio is 254-697-6633. Give us a call with any type of questions, commentary, all complaints. Go to Trey. Trey, you prepared to take those complaints? Sounds good. And so is this Fresh Joe from CEFCO I'm drinking, my extra large premium coffee. Okay, time's a ticking, so I'm going to move on. We got lots going on in the show. In our License to Carry segment, since we've restarted the show a few weeks ago, I have been once again dissecting the law with you when it comes to license to carry. Now, on today's show, I'll be discussing signage with you and how it can and cannot restrict you from entering a property or a premise. Although a property owner in the state of Texas may not want you on their property, they still must post a sign correctly for it to be effective. We may be discussing that in just a little bit, too, which is going to be good, so get your note-taking materials ready. I'm going to read to you Penal Code 30-06 and Penal Code 30-07 and show you and tell you about the different signs that do or do not apply. It is extremely important that you know and understand these signs so that you can make the best decisions on how to respond to them. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there are reasons why I am so adamant on signage, and you should be too. And here's a handful to think about. It's the law to know and understand and comply with them. A property owner has the right to keep you out if they wish by using the proper sign. And you and I as license holders must go through a long process to get our license. We must pass all the eligibility requirements, take a 5.5-hour class, take a shooting test, take a written exam, get fingerprinted, submit to background checks and pay all the applicable fees. Now, because I and you have to do that, and I have done that to be able to carry, I feel it not too difficult for the property owner to comply with what the law states is the way that they have to inform me. It is positively clear the sign and verbiage that needs to be conspicuously visible to the public. And that's Penal Code 30-6, 30-7, 51%, verbal commands. So let me read to you now Penal Code 30-6 and 30-7 before we take our break. So when we come back, we can talk to Attorney Benton Ross Watson, and he's going to give us his expertise dissection of these laws. So here we go. Penal Code 30-6 and 30-7. This section creates an offense for a license holder to carry a handgun on the property of another if he had noticed that either entry on the property by a license holder with a handgun was forbidden or remaining on the property with a handgun was forbidden and the license holder failed to depart. This section requires oral or written notice by the owner of the property or someone with apparent authority to act for the owner. In order for a license holder to receive written notice, a card, sign, or document must contain the following language. There's a key word in there. It says must. Here we go. Pursuant to Section 30-6 Penal Code, trespass by license holder with a concealed handgun, a person licensed under Subchapter H, Chapter 411 Government Code, Handgun Licensing Law, may not enter this property with a concealed handgun. Or, Penal Code 30-7, trespass by license holder with openly carried handgun, a person licensed under Subchapter H, Chapter 411 Government Code, Handgun Licensing Law, may not enter this property with a handgun that is carried openly. How we doing, Trey? You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
All right. If the notice is given by a sign on the property, the sign must be in both English and Spanish, must be in contrasting colors with block letters at least 1 inch in height, and must be displayed in a conspicuous manner clearly visible to the public. It is an exception to the application of this section that the property on which the license holder carries a handgun is owned or leased by a governmental entity and is not a premise or other place on which the license holder is prohibited from carrying the handgun under sections 4603 and 4603.5. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you remember from last week, we had Attorney Rick Dodd on, and we're talking about these governmental entities, and we're talking about this and that, and we're dissecting the law. And there's so much to dissect in 2 or 3 pages of law here. So now we're on this aspect of it. We're talking about the signs. And when we come back from this break. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today, again, is March 18, 2017. We're still here live, thank goodness. And we'll be here live until noon. Feel free to be part of the show on the ranch here at 254-697-6633. Give us a call. Say hi. Tell us what you think. Give us an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Go to the website. Check out all that we have to offer there, the classes, so on and so forth. Now, I'm very honored and pleased to introduce to you here in our attorney segment. Last couple of weeks has been Rick Dodd. We have a good friend, good attorney here, Attorney Benton Ross Watson, who's going to be doing our attorney section and helping us to dissect the penal codes here. So, first of all, let me welcome Attorney Benton Ross Watson to the show. Ross, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you can make it because I hear a lot of good things. And I'll tell you what, I don't know who knows you out there. I'm sure a lot of people know you out there. But for the listening audience, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you know Rick, what's the relationship there? It'd be kind of interesting to hear about that.
Went to school down in Houston for law school, played football at Blinn, went up to Arkansas to play. I'm from Cameron. Know a lot of people in Milam County, wanted to come back here and fight in the trenches. I've been doing legal work here for over 4 years, but I've been licensed to practice here for just shy of 4 years. I actually went to law school for entertainment and things of that nature, but really got involved.
Whoa. You went to for the entertainment of it or to defend entertainers?
For entertainment law.
Yeah. Okay, I was going to say.
Sports law and things like that. Yeah.
Learning law cannot be entertaining, right?
I don't know. It can be kind of fun, actually.
Okay.
We're nerds, so I guess. So I really kind of got involved in trial advocacy. South Texas College of Law was number one in the nation during that time, and I really became passionate about it. So I came back here and had an opportunity here in Cameron to work with the Clyde Chandler and people like Rick Dodd. Clyde is a awesome trial attorney, and so I really got some good experience and to what I wanted to do, so I came back here to do that, and I've had all kinds of help, work several cases with Rick. We love litigating, things of that nature.
Did you just win a big case just the other day?
Yes, and Coryell County is not guilty on 2 counts of sexual assault. So,
all right, well, great.
First degree, yeah, 5 to 99 years. So,
all right, so we're not wet behind the ears. We are established. We know what we're doing. We've got some good information here, and I gave you some information as to what we're going to be talking about today. And I'm going to ask you some questions, and I think we're going to have some good dialogue. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're licensed to carry or thinking about getting it, you need to listen up. This is good stuff to know. It's important stuff. It's mandatory stuff to know. So are you ready to hit it?
I am. Let's go.
Okay. All right, Ross. Let's talk about signage. Now, this is where I come from, and so do many others who have a license to carry. We play by the rules, since we have to go through a lengthy process to get a license. Now, if we go through the rules, we feel that others should do the same. But to be on the same sheet of music, we must be able to read the music. And the music in this case is signage when it pertains to license to carry. So let me read to you. I've got a list of questions here. I'm going to read to you my first question. Let's talk about it, okay? Let's clarify. In case there is any hidden meaning, what does Penal Code 30-06 and Penal Code 30-07 say and mean? In a nutshell, basically.
Basically, if you're told that you cannot come onto somebody's property, right, openly carrying a weapon or a concealed weapon under 30-06 or 30-07, and they don't want you there, you need to leave.
Now, we're not talking verbal, we're talking the actual signage of Penal Code 30-06 and 30-07. Because verbiage is another part of that, but it's like a separate section of that. Isn't that correct? So if we're talking signage, Penal Code 30-06 and 30-07 has to be posted properly. And then in addition to that, if they do a verbal, is that correct?
See, this is the problem with the Texas legislature. It's ambiguous. It is vague. There is no definition for the oral communication. We don't know if there has to be a sign, right, or whether oral notice is appropriate, right, or adequate or sufficient. And you're going to have the problem of understanding what their oral notice was and being able to prove that later.
Okay, so let's clarify to the audience here. What we're doing is we're reading the black and white printed paper that states the law, and then we try to understand the law the best we can, and we try to apply it, and then your expertise shows that there's lots of loopholes or gray areas and things of that nature. So when people are listening to us, they can put the two together and hopefully make the best decision that works for them at the moment with their understanding of what we're talking about. Would that be a good summary of what we're doing here?
It is.
Okay. So the brief explanation of 30-06 and 30-07 was explained. Let's talk about when the notice is given. The law is very specific. When a license to carry knows and understands the law, they are looking for signage that lets them know the person who put up the sign understands the law as well. That man's signage needs to be specific according to the law. A sign that reads, no guns, absolutely no guns, gunner unauthorized, a circle with a slash with a gun inside of it, do not meet the criteria for the laws of Texas to keep a license to carry from entering the property. Would you not agree that the law is for boundaries, the protection of rights? So the rights given to some are not abridged or taken away by others just by their opinion, preference, or attitude towards the right to carry?
I would agree with that, but you also have to realize that the property owner himself or herself also has rights to exclude others. And so there may be listeners on here saying, well, if I own a piece of property, right, and I don't want people there, I don't care whether they're handgun carriers or red shirt wearers or they have green hair, I don't want them on my property, I have a right to exclude them from my property. And so the law is actually trying to strike a balance, right, and weigh the fairness of certain rights. And it's trying to give property owners the ability to exclude, right, handgun carriers, right, whether they be concealed or open, right, under 30-07 or 30-06, right, with the handgun, the licensee, I'm going to call him or her, right, the licensee's rights to carry an open or concealed handgun. And so in this situation, right, it's not going to be, or at least you're going to have a defense to criminal trespass by going onto somebody's property when they don't want you there, right? But if they have the proper sign in place, right, that has the, and while ago, I want to specify, when we were reading 30-06, and it's basically the same for 30-07. When we talked about the language on the sign, it's not just the following. The law actually says that the written communication, right, has to contain language identical. Words mean things. If I learned anything in law school, it is that words mean things.
And punctuation, too.
Yes. Yeah. And so, but it's not just punctuation. The word is simple and it's clear and it's straightforward. The legislature has said that the property owner, if they want to exclude license holders, the language, the written communication, must be identical to the following. And then it says, right, under Penal Code 30-06 or 30-07, right, and it references, right, carrying openly or carrying concealed, right, the person licensed under the subchapter H of 411 Government Code, which is basically the license to carry law, right, is prohibited from carrying the handguns openly or concealed on that property. So if you're asking me, right, does the law say specifically, right, that they have to have that specific sign? That is what the law says.
Okay, now, thank you, because I harp on this, but I harp on two things. I harp on it's written, it's clear as day, I understand it, I promote it. But there's all this challenge with law depending on how it's brought apart, brought to the court. So that's why I think you're about to bring up some of these problems that can arise due to lack of understanding or opinions. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
So when you look at this law too, right, it kind of the beginning of it tracks the regular criminal trespass law, which is that if you receive notice, right, from the owner of the property or somebody with what we call apparent authority that act for the owner, right, and they tell you to leave or not to come on the property and you don't leave or you come on anyway, right, you got in trouble. So this law is very, very similar. It says that, you know, if you receive oral or written communication from the property owner or someone with the apparent authority, right, you know, then you can be in trouble for not following their written communication or their oral communication that tells you either to leave or not to come in. The problem, which is why I was being ambiguous a while ago to your questions, is that there is no definition for the oral communication. And there's actually been requests sent to the Attorney General of Texas asking him, hey, it was actually in regard to a government entity, so it doesn't give me a clear picture of what might happen in a private situation, but that individual asked the Attorney General, is it okay for a government entity, right, to give me the signage weapons-free zone? And the Attorney General's opinion was actually that, well, the legislature has been ambiguous and vague in this situation, but what we can tell you is that if that government entity is not one of those places that you and Rick already discussed about being off limits for license holders, right, then they have no right, right, to place any kind of sign trying to prohibit you from coming in. But as to other issues with the notice, you know, we're going to stick with this very specific situation that you spoke about because the legislature has not made this clear. And I think there is traps, right, for people who are unaware or unwary of the of the consequences that can come about from a situation of being somewhere.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why we're talking about it. It's the traps. Just because it says it and just because we understand it, there are those traps. And just because you think you're right, it may not always be profitable. And that's why we're discussing this. So not to tell you what to do, but so you can glean all this information, put it in your own data banks, and make your own personal decisions what you're going to do at the moment. I'm going to jump all over the place here. Let me sidebar for a second. Penal Code 30-06, 30-07 needs to be posted in a conspicuous manner. Is a sign like that down in the lower right-hand corner of a pane glass window that's only 3/4 inch tall in letters valid? Do you get away with it, or is the intent of the law there? And can, in your opinion, is that within the confines of the law?
It specifically says that the letters must be block letters, they must be in contrasting colors, they must be 1 inch in height, and must be displayed in a conspicuous manner. This goes, I think, when we talk about any kind of notice, we have several considerations. We have like basically the method, the manner, and the means, right, with a time element, right, interspersed between all those is an important factor, right? And so we look at method. What is the form
of the communication. When I mean form, I don't mean the verbiage. I mean, where is it placed?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it on a, is it written or is it oral? Right? Is it on a, is it on a card or a document or something to that effect? Or is it a sign that's bolted in right at the door when you walk in? Okay, and so I think a sign on the door, right, that has contrasting colors, it's got a red on it somewhere, you're not going to have an argument that it's not conspicuous, right? I think that if you have, right when you walk in the door, probably, I think if you see a sign right there, you know, in front of the door, that, but that's inside, I think you're okay. But is your sign, like you said, in the corner of the window? Is it a window that's facing the street? And is that the only door? And do you have to walk past it? What if you walk from the other side?
Mm-hmm.
Right? These are all fact questions that go into...
Rick would say, and he has said on the show, I'll be more than happy to defend you to show that you're right after you pay me thousands of dollars. So even exactly. though you're being right... Now let me... While we're talking here, I brought signage in for when we get the YouTube cut of this interview. I'm going to show you the sign on the screen right now. And this one here is Penal Code 30-06. And in my opinion... Ross, this is the proper way to post a sign. If you can see that in the screen, everybody, it's in English and Spanish, contrasting colors, professionally done, very conspicuous to the public. You can see it. Now, it doesn't have to be blues and greens. It can be black and white and reds and all that. But that's a sign that you cannot argue that somebody knows the law, decided to put in a conspicuous manner. I'm going to say, okay, I went through hoops, they went through hoops. I'll respect them because it's their property. I'm not going to go in, but I'm not going to give my money. Okay, that's Penal Code 30-06 now. Okay, the same thing, looks almost identical, is Penal Code 7. Same thing. English and Spanish, contrasting colors, placed in a conspicuous manner so that the public can clearly see it. Okay? Very important signs to know. All right, we're going all over the place. I'll tell you what, let's just, for the purposes of time, let's go on to our next segment, or our next section here. All right, Ross, in my mind, Penal Code 30-06 and 30-07 are quite simple. We just discussed it and talked about it. Let's move to TABC, Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, and see how they say, or see what they say comes to signage. Now, two signs pertain to this. It's 51% in unauthorized possession of a weapon. First, we're going to clarify the difference. And once again, I got a sign, so I can show it to you on the YouTube once we cut it here. Ladies and gentlemen, you are all familiar with this sign. This is from TABC. Let me clarify where it comes from. When you sell alcohol in an establishment, TABC, you see the permit, waiting on a permit to sell and serve alcohol. TABC determines what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, how much money you're going to make, so on and so forth. So if you go to a 7-Eleven or a CEFCO, which I recommend you go to CEFCO, get a premium extra large coffee, tastes delicious, and you'll enjoy it. Don't forget to get your coffee card and get stamped. But anyway, here's the notice. It basically says the unauthorized possession of a weapon. When you have your license, you're authorized. So this sign is basically a waste of a tree for when it comes to a license to carry person. The other one is the 51% sign, the big red 51% or purple 51% or faded red because the colors seem to fade when it's in the. This basically says that if they sell alcohol for on-premise consumption and they make 51% or more of their income from the sale or service of alcoholic beverages for on-premise consumption, that'll become a felony offense if you go in there with a concealed weapon. So back to this. In legal terms, I basically did, but clarify the difference once again between the two signs. Like, how important is this sign, the unlawful notice or the unlawful, unlicensed possession of a weapon? It really doesn't mean anything when it comes to us, does it?
No.
I mean, it's self-evident. Somebody argued, though, the unlicensed possession of a weapon. If you had a rifle, and we all know that you can carry a rifle as long as you're not doing it in a threatening manner here in the state of Texas, okay? But it's not licensed. Does that count under something like this? Because it's not licensed. It's just a right to carry it. But the sign says unlicensed. That's a trick one, isn't it?
Well, the code says firearm, right, in many places. So, yes, they could, you know, they could keep you from carrying just a regular firearm on their premises. And that's why I believe that the legislature said in 30-06 and 30-07, and I go back to this, and I'm sorry, but... The codes you're referencing, especially for the places that sell more than 51% alcohol for on-premises consumption,
mm-hmm.
right? Those laws, which is 46035 and 4603, they all give a defense, right, for notice being placed in the manner as specified in 30-06 and 30-07. 30-06 is a defense even under those provisions, right? And so that's why I believe just saying that there's no weapons allowed, right, or this is a weapons-free zone, doesn't cover, doesn't tell the licensee, right, who's different than just a normal firearm carrier, right, that he's not allowed to come on the property, right? Because license holders have a record of being law-abiding citizens.
That's
and a
right.
record of doing what we're supposed to be doing, and the legislature wanted to protect that, and we have different rights than other firearm carriers, okay? And so just telling the license holder that this is a weapons-free zone, right, doesn't tell us, right, that doesn't speak to us as a specific group,
mm-hmm.
right? It only speaks to, hey, we don't want everyday people carrying firearms on this property.
Ross, let me ask some. I may not have prepped you on this. You may not know the answer. If you don't, just let me know. A licensed to carry person goes through a gun-free zone. There's a sign on the road. It says gun-free zone. That does not pertain to a licensed to carry holder. Is that not correct? And if it does not, what does it pertain to?
Well, it wouldn't pertain to the license holder anyway, because there are some regulations that say it does not apply to driveways, streets, things of that nature. So a license
let me clarify it so I don't confuse you. What I'm trying to get at is this. My understanding is this. If you have a license to carry and you go into a down a street and it says this is a gun-free zone, people say, well, I can't go in there. And my answer to them is, no, you can go in there. Here's the understanding of it. And that is, any crime that is committed with a gun there is bumped up one step higher than if you were to do the same crime in an area that was not a no-gun zone. Is
Yes, definitely. So with some exceptions to schools that you guys spoke about, I think last week, maybe on the other two episodes, like if there's a school-sponsored activity mm-hmm. that's being conducted at the time
right.
on that specific piece of property, then I would say, yeah, you can't go on there. But otherwise, right, a government entity cannot prevent you, right, from going onto a weapons-free zone, right, if you're a license holder. Right, they cannot. So that is true. That is correct. I mean, there are a couple of exceptions that you guys have spoke about in 4603 and 46035.
Always exceptions.
Right? But for the general rule, yes. Like even for institutions of higher education, I can take my license, my gun, if I'm a license holder, onto those pieces of property.
Okay. All right. Look, time is running out. I want to get this other question here. And ladies and gentlemen, let me be very clear. Everybody knows C.J. Grisham. I moved here to Texas 24 years ago, and I would ask 10 different officers, can I carry a rifle or a shotgun in my car? And I would get 10 different answers. Because of C.J. Grisham, everybody knows you can carry a rifle in this state, open-carried rifle, as long as it's not in a threatening manner. And there's no question, no doubts about it. That's what I'm trying to establish. I want everybody on the same sheet of music. I want everybody to understand that comes to law enforcement, that comes to a person carrying a weapon and somebody who doesn't have a license to carry a weapon. If we all understand the same law, we reduce or eliminate somebody's opinion. The last thing I want is your opinion, okay? I want knowledge and fact when it comes to this. Now, let's go to, and we'll close it up here. Outside of any opinion or commentary, let's talk the legitimacy of signage other than Penal Code 30-06 and 30-07 or TABC signage. Example, no guns allowed, circle with a slash, no guns and that means you, etc. Nothing matters to an LTC other than the state-approved signs, correct? And then you had some possible legislation coming up.
Well, oh, so like I said, it's hard to answer that if that was a question. I agree with what you're saying, right? It was sort of like me when I asked my leading questions to witnesses that I want their answer, right? I agree with the statement, but there's always a gray area, and you shouldn't poke the wasp nest,
yeah, right.
right? Because I think Rick was trying to convey on the last show that, yes, you're going to pay thousands of dollars for a defense. You're going to be putting your faith in the hands of a judge, of a jury, of a lawyer, and if you lose, the appeals courts, right? And
that. And I accept my challenge is this. I'm going to make my own decision based on what I know, not what you just think. So when somebody comes up to me with a lack of information and knowledge, I'm not going to say, they're telling me I can't protect myself because of their ignorance towards the law. I study the law. I know the law. So I can make a good decision as to whether or not I want to go in there and poke the wasp nest. I'm not going to do that. But I want to know I'm right, you're wrong, for a decision that's best for me.
I what the legislature thinks. So if you want to cling to the law, if you want to cling to what the legislature... Look, is the intent of the clear language of the rule. We don't care what other interpretations could. We don't care what the consequences are. We don't care what the legislature could have intended, right? When the language is clear, and in my opinion, the written notice thing saying it must be identical, right? Or the oral notice that complies with the language above, right? When that's what it says in the statute, really doesn't give you a definition for oral communication, right? When it says that, I think it has to be identical. And we know that the legislature knows what to do because, like we said, you just asked me about some upcoming legislation. There's been, I don't think we have time to go through them all, but there has been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, at least 6, maybe 7, right, bills already introduced in this one.
Can you make the read the title of the one that shows about all the different types of signs?
Those are, every single one of those bills is asking, is introducing, right, changes to these rules, 30-06 and 30-07, right, to change, right, the language on the sign, and half of those that I just said are trying to add pictures and weapons-free zones with guns with a line drawn through them.
Chaos, total chaos.
And that tells me, right, that the legislature knew what they were doing, right, when they initially said that the written communication must have language identical, right, to this type of wordage. Right.
So there is no confusion.
What you're just saying, is it prohibiting me from carrying firearms generally? Right? Is this a school zone? What is this place? That's why it must be identical. And most of these have a poor outcome right now, but it's still early within the legislative process, so we'll just have to keep an eye out and see.
Okay. Ross, excellent. I enjoyed it greatly. Can you tell us on how people can make contact with you?
105 East Main Street here in Cameron. That's my office. My email address is benton@watson.legal. It's just my name, Dot Legal. I mean, you can just ask anybody in town. Probably everybody knows who I am and where they can find me. So,
and what would be your expertise and if somebody needed some services from you?
Oh, I'm a general practitioner, but yeah, I have a passion for criminal defense and contract and civil litigation. Those are my
fantastic
areas.
Now, I'm assuming based on your schedule at this point, we'll get to have you back on next Saturday?
Oh, I hope so.
Oh, fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, This part of the show will be put on YouTube. If you're interested, just go to Mel Aaron's Gun Shop, check it out, and check all the other ones, the other two we had with Rick. And we've got so many more videos with special guests that you can check out, get a lot of information. And when we come back, we'll probably do a product review. So we'll see you on the other side.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Again, it's March 18th, 2017. We had a fantastic segment with attorney Benton R. Watson. And hopefully we'll have him on here, him or Rick, one of the two, every Saturday around the same time. Lots of great information. It's good to pick the brain of somebody who's going to be in the courtroom with you, God forbid, if you got to go there, just to kind of know what's going on. So let me tell you, instead of our product spotlight, I'll do that after the voice comes on. But right now I'm going to give you what's going on in the month of March. Lots of things going on. First off, last night was ladies' night at the gun shop, at the gun range. And the numbers of ladies showing up is growing. It's a lot of fun. They all have a great time. And if they want, they can pretty much shoot anyone's gun if they ask. And their range time is free. And that's every third Friday of the month. So guys, get some ammo, oil up the guns, and bring your lady to Aaron's Gun Shop, Ladies' Night. Have a lot of fun there, get to meet a lot of people, talk, so on and so forth. Now, today, because we've been going so fast, I forgot to mention, today at 2 o'clock, I have another license to carry class. I'm having to open up more dates because I'm getting more calls. But I've got some room available on this one since it was so spontaneous. But today at 2 o'clock, there's still room available. The price for the class is $60 for the new license. And for those of you who already have one, you can come today as a refresher course for only $40. And listen, I highly recommend it. That's a cheap amount of money to spend on a refresher course for something you're carrying that can change your whole life if you pull it out, okay? I guarantee you, you don't remember everything you're supposed to, so give me a call now to sign up. You can call here at 254-697-6633. Let me know you're coming, and we'll get you squared away. Class starts at 2. I need you to get there about 10 minutes prior, and you'll be out by about 7:30. You'll be going over all the things required by the state to you to get a certificate to submit to the state. March 24th, listen up everywhere out there. If you can hear my voice, listen. March 24th is our second annual law enforcement benefit shoot-off. It's picking up fast, too. The teams are starting to roll in, and the smack talk is picking up fast. Now, I don't have any teams from Bell County yet. It's probably because they're just kind of scared to compete, you know, kind of chicken to compete against Milam County law enforcement. So pass the word out there to Bell County. Get your teams together. Give me a call here. Milam County Sheriff's Team says they're going to already take the trophy. Cameron PD says no way. Rockdale PD is just sitting back quietly waiting to pounce. And all the while, Temple PD, Belton PD, and Bell County Sheriff Department realized they couldn't hit the broadside of a barn while standing inside of it. So, time will tell who will win. For details on the competition, go to aaronsgunshop.com on the homepage. Up there on the top, you'll see the link. Just click onto it. March 26th, I will be at the Hilton Garden Inn with my full bar setup. If you're getting married, if you're having a birthday party, a corporate event, or anything like that, you need to come check it out, especially if you're getting married. It's going to be a bridal show at the Hilton Garden Inn. I'm going to be there. A whole bunch of other vendors are going to be there. You get to see and set up or think of things that you haven't thought about before by seeing them. Sign up people for your event. But if you're looking to have alcohol served at your event, it's a good idea to have a bartender there to do it. One, it looks great. It's a centerpiece of the party. It's TABC certified. They keep an eye on people, make sure they're not over drinking, keep it in control. It just looks nice. If you want to see what the setup looks like, go to aaronsgunshop.com and go to the Nightcaps page, and you'll get to see a couple pictures there. You get to see the flyer, what we have to offer. But it's a great opportunity to have a great centerpiece. And I, your bartender, will be more than happy to serve you drinks in a manner that has flair and measurements are correct and everybody's having a good time. So check that out. Also, if you go to aaronsgunshop.com and go to the High Cap Adventure page, we have different seminars. We have M4 seminars. We have semi-automatic rifle seminars. We have ladies-only handgun and home defense seminars. We've got co-ed classes. All sorts of things we can design and work for you. We've got the facility there. We've got the indoor range. You can go to the YouTube channel, too. We've got videos, Aaron's Gunshop video channel on YouTube, and check out the videos of our training there. We've got the shoot house. We've got the tactical range down below. So all these different things right here in your local neighborhood, and you can participate in it. All we need to do is get a group of people. If you want a party on your own, a group of five or more on your own, we can set up a class specifically for you. Or if a class date opens up, you can participate in that as well. It's a lot more fun, in my opinion, if you get a group of people that you know, because you can take pictures, talk to each other, have fun, have good memories, learn a whole bunch of new skills. And all the while, when you go back home, you can protect your family, your property, and all that with all the new skills that you learn. Okay. With that, Chief, Officer Randy Dixon is here now, the voice of law enforcement. He is a plethora, a walking encyclopedia of information. He's got tons of information when it comes to good old common sense and just good stuff to know. So I'm going to get him on a few minutes early. And with that, if you have any questions or comments, you want to be part of the show, don't forget to give us a call at 254-697-6633 or give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. But until that time, let's get the voice on, Officer Randy Dixon.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Hope you're doing okay today on this fine Saturday morning. A little humid outside, but that makes it for a good day. It means it's going to clear off. We're going to have a great weekend. We haven't been down to South by Southwest in Austin yet. You ought to go. It's a great time. A lot of fun. But you need to be careful if you go down there, which brings up to what we're going to kind of talk about today. You know, I've been friends with Matt for some time now and believe in wholeheartedly in what he talks about and what he believes in. And, you know, if you look around the country and you see the number of incidents that have been happening, the growing escalation of crime between people and the fear that people go through, you understand a lot of things that really make a lot of sense when you start talking about license to carry and the reason you should carry. But you need to do it the right way. And I'm glad that Mr. Benton was here this morning. Had a lot of good information. Listened to him, and I learned some things this morning as well. Even after 44 years of law enforcement, you're never too old to learn new tricks and new ideas. One of the things I'm going to talk about today, and I think it's kind of a, it's kind of something that most of us have maybe undergone in our lives, but not really believed we undertook such a action happened against us. But I want to talk about a little bit about, have you ever been the victim of a stalker? Now, what is stalking? Well, we all know that we see TV and we see the shows about the dastardly stalkers who capture people, throw them in trunks of cars, take them off and have their way with them or whatever they do, kill them or whatever. But, you know, that's really not what we're talking about when we're talking about stalking. You know, every day in this country, law enforcement receives a call from someone who feels that they've been a victim of being either harassed, followed, monitored, or stalked by someone. This is a very serious situation, and that a person's belief and fear is internal. And that feeling of being followed or harassed is necessary to give the needed elements to file such a crime as stalking. According to Texas law, a person on more than one occasion is a receiver of conduct that makes a person feel that they're been followed, that they're been harassed, or the conduct is such that he believes is threatening, that's basically a line of what is necessary to file a stalking law. Fear is the optimum element that is necessary for such a case to be filed, folks. Many times what people perceive as stalking is just harassment in its truest form. Both have elements that must be present. We urge anyone who feels that they have been the victim of harassment or stalking to contact your local law enforcement agency, wherever it may be. Victims of stalking include individuals presently at risk from imminent danger to their physical and emotional welfare. And those who have that danger, believe it or not, it's continually pending. It's something that doesn't go away because you feel that you're in danger. You know, victims of stalking include individuals who have really no rhyme or reason. You can't put a picture on what someone looks like who's a victim of stalking. You know, in addition to becoming familiar with the stalking laws, everyone needs to understand that victims of stalking should be informed about the resources and procedural precautions available to assist and protect them. It's so important for stalking victims to recognize that their victimization is not their fault. Stalking is a crime that can touch anyone, regardless of gender. Doesn't make any difference what color you are, your sexual orientation, your socioeconomic status, your geographical location, or with whom the person may even associate. Unfortunately, there is no single psychological or behavioral profile for stalkers. Wish there was, it'd be a lot easier for everybody in law enforcement. Every stalker is different. The one profile that touches most stalkers is they are controlling, obsessive, and compulsive in reactions. You know, one of the sad things that we see at law enforcement and have seen over the years is that when someone, especially when a male-female situation between each other, there are times when either one of them becomes overly obsessive in controlling each other. It's not a healthy relationship, folks. This makes it virtually impossible to devise a single effective strategy for victims to cope with stalkers. That behavior they have, which can then be applied to every struggle and every situation that they encompass in their whole lives. This is why it is so vital that victims of stalking immediately seek the advice of local victim specialists who can work with them to devise a safety plan or an action plan to address their unique situation and their circumstances. Get with someone who knows what they're doing. Get with someone who can give you the advice you need. But I'm telling you, the following is not intended to be a set of strict guidelines for stalking victims, but rather practical information to assist them. You know, I can't tell you if you had this happen to you, you're a victim of stalking. That's something that you have to figure out yourself, and you have to talk to someone who is privy to your unique situation. There is no guarantee that if you follow all or some of these strategies that you'll be safe. However, implementing these strategies may reduce your odds of physical or emotional harm from your stalker. Any person who suspects or believes that they are currently being stalked should report all contacts and incidents to their local law enforcement. Every law enforcement agency will listen to you. It doesn't make any difference where you're at. Talk to them, explain to them what's going on. While a victim may not be in immediate danger, the potential always exists, folks. Therefore, it's a contingency plan of sort, or a fire escape plan, which you might call it, may be appropriate for you. Victims of stalking cannot predict what stalkers will do, but can determine their own response in the stalking behavior. You know, your personal safety and harm prevention is of the utmost importance for you and your victim and the victims of stalking. It's so important that you plan and carry. You know, whatever you plan to do, however you plan to protect yourself, you've got to repeat that. You've got to do that things. We're a creature of habits. And when you make the same habits, you do the same thing over and over again, many times it makes it very easy for our stalkers or our followers to be able to see what we're doing. We need to change things up sometimes. You know, while victims cannot control the stalking behavior, they can be empowered to take steps to keep themselves, their family, and loved ones safe, folks. The creation of a safety plan can assist victims in doing this. A simple safety plan is a combination of suggestions, responses created to help victims reduce the risk of harm. You can do that yourself. You can think about that yourself, or you can get a professional to help you. It's simply just a tool designed to help the response of the victims and know their specific situation that evaluates what's going on and how they're going to handle it. You know, we sometimes think that we're safe in our own homes, safe in our small towns. There is absolutely no town, no city, no home that is 100%, absolutely 100% free from harm. I mean, probably the most protected person in our country is our President of the United States. This past week, he was put in jeopardy simply by the theft of a laptop computer and some lapel pins from a Secret Service agent. You know, a safety plan is what you have to do, folks, in today's world and times, especially if you put yourself out there in a situation where you're intermingling with people, you're around people, you have people that are not what you would call your best friends. While victims can make safety plans on their own, it is often helpful to enlist the assistance of some trained professionals. Law enforcement officers can help you. A victim advocacy center can help you. But whichever you use, you need to have options which will best enhance your safety and will work to develop a safety plan to address each unique situation and circumstance you may have. Call your local law enforcement. Ask them. Put them on the spot. Ask them who you can get help from. If they won't help you, just keep calling or call someone else. When you are doing safety planning, folks, victims can consider what is known about the stalker, the people who might help, how to improve safety in one's environment, and what to do in case of an emergency. Those are things that you need to consider when you talk about your plan. The average stalking case lasts approximately 2 years, folks. It's not just a short overnight thing. Therefore, stalking safety planning must begin when the victim first identifies the stalking behavior and continues throughout the entire duration of the situation or the case. Safety plans need to be reevaluated and updated continuously as the stalking behavior changes, the victim's routine changes, and the access to services and support changes. Whatever you do, don't be static. Remember, be fluid, be able to move things around. Be able to see what's best for you. If you move, you need a new plan. If you start a new job, you need a new plan. If you bring out new friends or start hanging out in new places, you need to make a new plan. Victims are encouraged to keep a log of all stalking behaviors and all stalking behaviors, including emails and phone messages. Never throw anything away that has something that ties it back to the person that's stalking you. This log, as well as any gifts or letters the stalker sends the victim, can be collected and used as evidence, which is important. The evidence will help prove what has been going on if the victim decides to report the stalking to the police or apply for a protective order. This log is vital, folks. Keeping evidence, keeping track is vital. You've got to have something that shows what that person's behavior is. Keep records of the contacts and the times you've seen the individual watching you or being in the same place you're in. Check for the electronic stalking as well. You know, right now, everybody seems to be on the social media network and bandwagon. Keep records of anything you hear or see where comments may be made on social media or any electronic form of medium. Pay attention to what is said at local restaurants and coffee shops. If you hear people talking about it, ask them where you heard that from. Many people have discovered Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or these other electronic medias that have become an avenue for stalking. Many victims have found simple ways to make the stalking affect them less. They may ask someone else to pick up and sort their mail, get a second phone number given only to trained and trusted people, or have people at work or school screen phone calls for you and inform the police if the stalker shows up for sure. Relying on trusted friends and family is important for victims of stalking. You know, your family is your biggest asset. If you have someone that is trying to stalk you or someone that you feel is becoming a little bit too accustomed to your ways, ask them to help you. Ask them to help protect you as well. Fundamentally, folks, in all honesty, stalking is a series of actions that puts a person in fear for their safety. The stalker may follow you, harass you, call you on the telephone, watch your house, send you mail you don't want, or act in some other way that frightens you. That is exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to get a reaction out of you. The exact legal definitions vary from state to state, but all states now have some kind of laws against stalking. Virtually any unwanted contact between a stalker and their victims, which directly or indirectly communicates a threat or places the victim in fear, can generally be referred to as stalking, folks, whether or not it meets a state's exact legal definition or not. Stalkers use a wide variety of methods to harass their targets. The inventiveness, the persistence, and obsessive nature of stalkers is almost, I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unimaginable until you've experienced being the target of such. Stalking is a serious, potentially life-threatening crime. Don't take it lightly. Even in its less severe forms, it permanently changes the lives of people who are victimized by this type of crime, as well as affecting their friends, families, and coworkers. Law enforcement is only beginning to understand how to deal with this, unfortunately. It takes a while for all crimes to be recognized. It takes a while for us in law enforcement, how to deal with them. But you have professional law enforcement officers in this area that will care and help and assist the victims of such crime. And this is what's really sad, folks. Stalking is much more common than you might think. Although it is hard to get accurate figures because law enforcement organizations have only recently started keeping records, it's much more prevalent than we know. Best estimates indicate that as many as 1.4 million Americans are stalked each year, and that 1 in 20 women will become targets of stalking behavior at least once during their lifetime. Folks, that's scary to me. 1 in 20. What if that's your daughter? What if that's your mother? What if that's your wife or your girlfriend? So it takes an effort to protect ourselves in this world today. Many men are also being stalked. Believe it or not, it's a gender-free crime. If you feel you are the victim of stalking or harassment, call someone. Report it. Report it to your local law enforcement agency. Whether you're a teacher, mother, father, or girlfriend, or boyfriend, coach, secretary, political adversary, nurse, factory worker, fireman, lawyer, or police officer, stalking should not and cannot be tolerated. So what I'm asking you folks is I want you to be safe out there. I want you to continue to prosper, and I want you to make sure that you understand that stalkers are dangerous folks. They're not safe people. They're people that will put you at risk, they'll put your lives at risk, but more especially, they change your freedoms, the way you do things. You know, and like I said, if you become the victim of a very serious stalker, there's a lot of ways you can protect yourself. You know, think about license to carry. I'm not advocating that you shoot someone. By any means, we're not advocating that. But I would rather have the protection necessary and needed than not have the protection necessary and needed. So until next week, I hope everyone has a safe weekend. Be careful. Remember, if you have any questions for us, give us a call here at the radio station. I'm here every Saturday morning. Be happy to answer anything you might want to ask me. I'll answer you truthfully and with the best knowledge I've got. So take care, everyone, and have a great weekend.
Todd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MESO-FIRM.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417. If you're planning a party for a wedding, birthday, anniversary, corporate event, or just to have fun, and you plan to serve alcohol, you need a bartender. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps bartending service is who you need to call. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps provides a complete portable bartending service. When you provide adult beverages to your guests, you want them served fast, correctly, and with flair. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps can do that for you. TABC certified, professional, and with a complete bar setup, Aaron's can help make your social event one to remember for a long time. Call Aaron's now at 254-482-0557 or email Aaron's at mail@aaronsnightcaps.com. Make Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps your first call and last call when you want a professional bartender for your next social or corporate event. Call 254-482-0557 or go to aaronsnightcaps.com. And that's powerful stuff.
Everybody, I'm back in the saddle. Been here now for 3 weeks. It's great to be back. There's something about the microphone. I don't know. Maybe it's because I talk and I got so much to say, and hopefully I can do something in a positive light to affect somebody out there in a positive way. It's always my goal. It's never my intention to cause harm or say things offensive. I do it. Everybody does it, but it's not my intention. So hopefully we're getting a positive effect from the show. Please give us a call, 254-697-6633. Tell us if you like the show. Make comment as to if there's something on the show you think would be of interest that pertains to this type of a show. You can email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out our YouTube channel. Speaking of YouTube, or actually go to my website, aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page. You're going to see, we've got a video posted up there of my son. My son, he's an actor. He's going to Southwestern University. He's learning languages and all that, but he acts. And he acts as my crackhead when we do our seminars. And, you know, he breaks into our shoot house and he's assaulting you, stealing your products, and you have rules. The crackhead doesn't have any rules. So he goes in there, and he's been doing it for a long time. So he knows the characteristics of people, what they do, what to look for, what to listen for, how to respond, how to react. So he's a good challenge, and he teaches you very well. But he's very good at it, and he's great at a lot of things. But if you go to the Facebook page and look at the video there, he is going to demonstrate to you in a five-second video why it's probably a good idea to have extra mags on you, okay, for your automatic pistol. So go check it out, aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the Facebook page, look at it, like it, like the video, make a good positive comment, show them your support, show your support, just show some support. Give us a call, 254-697-6633. We have a fantastic sponsor. It's ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer. Owner's Arch Kuntz. Great man, good guy, nice guy. Bend over backwards for you if you can. Everything you can within the confines of the law to make it legal. He'll do whatever he can. He finds things that is hard for other people to find. And you can reach them at 254-983-4417. That's 254-983-4417. Talk to Arch, Clint, Mike, Dennis. They got guns, ammo, reloading, knives, holsters, bags, oddities. And you can check them out there at the gun shop in Heidenhammer. But let me tell you about the product spotlight. He's got one gun in there. He's got tons of guns, but this one in particular I wanted to highlight just due to the fact that it's a great gun for a bunch of reasons. And it is the Taurus Public Defender, the polymer one. It's almost like a snub nose. It's just a little bit larger than a snub nose revolver. I'm going to read to you, like I always do, another opinion piece. And then I'm going to, after I read, not an opinion piece, but an article talking about this particular gun. And then I'm going to tell you why I think it's great for a woman or anybody who, one, doesn't have the ability to train or thinks they don't have to train or whatever. I'll explain it to you in a little bit. But this is from USACarry.com, written by Rob Tuck. Taurus Public Defender Polymer. Today we'll be taking a look at the Taurus Public Defender Polymer. It's 45 long Colt 410 gauge. This little hand cannon holds 5 shots, and Taurus claims it weighs in at about 27 ounces unloaded. Taurus released the Public Defender Polymer to be considered as a concealed carry weapon. The relatively small size, having an overall length of 7.65 inches, is very good for possible concealment. The barrel is a mere 2 inches long, and the gun at its widest point is only 1.5 inches. Taurus also includes the Taurus safety lock, which is in the form of a small key that gets inserted just below the hammer and turned. Once the gun is locked, it cannot be fired. The front sight is one of the red high visuals with a fixed rear sight. The red dot front sight allows for obtaining a quick sight picture and grips, not rubber grips, but ribber grips for the numerous ribs running horizontally along the handle. I'm sure we're all familiar with that type of grip that Taurus provides there. The gun can be fired in single or double action mode. Now, if you take a class from me or if you've taken a class from me, you know the different types of actions. If you don't, you need to take a class. And I've got a class today at 2 o'clock. It's still time to sign up. You will learn lots. Trust me. It is smooth, but it takes some effort to pull the double action, which they all do. In the single action, the trigger pull is much less, coming in at slightly over 5 pounds, which is about normal for that. The trigger itself has grooves in the entire length of it to provide for a better grip and feel to it. The frame is made of polymer over a steel frame. Even though it is small, it is easy to find and operate. The top surface is knurled so as to provide a surface that is easy to grip. Small touches like that and the trigger grooves are a welcome feature. The profile of the gun is dominated by the large cylinder. The cylinder releases on the left side, behind, and in line with the lower edge of the cylinder. Once the cylinder is deployed, the standard rod type unloading feature is present, and then you can unload your cartridges if you want to empty the gun or unload it so you can reload it again. All right, so that's the basic thing. And ANC Firearms has it. And if you go to my website, aaronsgunshop.com, and go to the Facebook page, you'll see the picture of it there. It'll have a price tag. Give them a call at 254-983-4417. But let me add my commentary to this particular weapon. Let me be clear. I'm not a Taurus guy. However, my go-to gun is my 1911 Taurus. I love that gun. It's the lightweight version. It's got the light rail on it. Every time I got all these different guns, that's the one I go to. Okay, I love it. But on the other, these newfangled guns that they're always coming up with, I'm just not into that kind of stuff. However, the Taurus Judge is another one of those that's just like, man, you got to have one of these. And here's the reason. If you're a rancher or a farmer and you've got this thing on your side and you see a snake, you got 5 rounds. You can put rat shot, slugs, buckshot, or even .45 long Colt in the cylinder. So depending on the situation or the threat, you can quickly open the cylinder, rotate the cylinder to the particular cartridge that you want for the particular purpose. If a snake, you get your rat shot. If you got a hog, you can either use buckshot or you can use your .45 long Colt. If you have a human critter that is threatening your life, you can use buckshot. And here's the other thing, too, since we brought that up. A person who buys a handgun, let's say a 9mm automatic pistol, and is shooting 9mm rounds through defensive loads, they have to be somewhat accurate and know how to use that gun. If you'll notice on all the times I read the NRA stories, a lot of people don't get shot in center mass. They usually get shot low, below the waist, buttocks, or it's high or something. It's because there's a lot of movement going on. So you have a single projectile going to an intended target. However, when it's shot and you moving or not holding it right, it may go somewhere totally different. Let's go now into the bedroom. There's an intrusion in the night. Let's say mom is home alone with the kids, or she's just home alone and she's not into training. She didn't do her training. She's not prepared, but she does have her Taurus Judge. And there she is. She's in a bedroom that's anywhere from 12 to 24 feet. Okay, in dimensions. The door is on one side, the bed's on the other, and she crouches behind the bed and the mattress so that she can grab her Taurus revolver and use it as a brace. And she keeps an eye on that door frame. And in her gun, in her Taurus Judge, she's got 5 rounds of buckshot. Since the Taurus Judge does not have a 3-inch cylinder, or it doesn't allow for 3-inch rounds, it only allows for 2.5-inch rounds on that particular model. If you use a cartridge or a shell with buckshot, it's going to have 3 pellets in each round. So if you do your math, 3 times 5, that's 15 pellets in a very short period of time, 1 or 2 seconds, that can be going downrange in the direction of a door with a bad, ugly intruder coming to try to steal, rob, rape, hurt, harm, kill. Your accuracy level does not have to be truly that great. So if you have failed to train, if you have failed to practice, if you have failed to take classes or lessons from somebody who can teach you how to shoot that gun well, this makes up for a lot of error. Another way to put it, if you had 5 .45 long Colt rounds in that Taurus Judge, you got 1 projectile every time going to a designated target. But if you have the buckshot in each cylinder, 1 shot, 3 pellets come out, they open up and expand, and then you shoot another round after that and 3 more after that, you got 15 pellets going downrange. So it's an excellent gun for home defense. And it's not that big, much bigger than a .38 snub nose. You could, for a larger person, have it inside your waist, have it in your purse, which I don't recommend because the purse is detachable, but a lot of women do it anyway. They don't listen to me, and then they get their purse stolen. So somehow, some way, have the gun attached to your body, or if it's in the home, it's great. I believe they also have, and don't quote me on this, but if you're able to get a light rail on the thing, that's even better because then you can put your light on there, and you've got 2 things in one hand. You got the gun in one hand, you got your light in one hand, and you got the free hand to make the phone call to 911 or to block yourself, defend yourself. So go to ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer. Call them up now, 254-983-4417. You're going to be asking for the Taurus Public Defender, the polymer one. Look at my Facebook page. You'll see a picture of it there. You have the price tag on it. Excellent gun, nice gun, sexy gun, useful gun. and it can be yours. Just go there and check it out and pick yours up now. All right, with that, Trey, I'll tell you what, it's almost the bottom of the hour. We're going to do our bottom of the hour break. And when we come back, I'm going to go over our, I'm going to read to you my opinion piece that I normally do in the beginning of the show, and I'm going to do it now. I wanted to make sure we got all our other points in before I did the opinion piece. So we'll be back on the other side. Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. We're back here at the bottom of the hour, the 11 o'clock hour. That's inside baseball going on right there. And then we'll be finishing it up at the whatever. Okay, we're not going to get into it. Ladies and gentlemen, last week I was going to read to you this, but we just got so busy, and I'm going to read it to you now. And my opinion piece, I read to you 2 weeks ago, The Last Will and Testament of Captain Henry T. Waskow, and told you that was basically me writing it because that's how I felt and feel about being who I am, to serve and protect all that I hold dear. Well, today I'm going to read to you an article written by Lieutenant Colonel retired Dave Grossman. You probably know the name, that I saw in the Concealed Handgun magazine. If you're a licensed to carry person, you can go to their website and sign up for the Concealed Handgun, become a member there, and every month you'll get the magazine. Well, I happened to see this, and I thought it fit perfectly with my, with who I am. And let's see if this fits you, which one fits you. This article states clearly who I am and may make you aware of who you are. All I can say is that you will not get a out of me. So let me now read to you an article by Lieutenant Colonel retired Dave Grossman. And this is from the Concealed Handgun magazine. Volume 33, quarter one of 2017. By Lieutenant retired Colonel Dave Grossman, author of On Killing, On Combat, Warrior Mindset, Mental Toughness Skills for Our Nation's Peacekeepers, and Stop Teaching Our Kids to Kill, a Call to Action Against TV, Movie, and Video Game Violence. Here we go. Honor never grows old, and honor rejoices the heart of age. It does so because honor is, finally, and about defending those noble and worthy things that deserve defending, even if it comes at a high cost. In our time, that may mean social disapproval, public scorn, hardship, persecution, or as always, even death itself. The question remains, what is worth defending? What is worth dying for? What is worth living for? And that was from William J. Bennett in a lecture to the United States Naval Academy on November 24th, 1997. Lieutenant Colonel Grossman goes on. He says, one Vietnam veteran, an old retired colonel, once said this to me. Most of the people in our society are sheep. They are kind, gentle, productive creatures who can only hurt one another by accident. This is true. Remember, the murder rate is 6 per 100,000 per year, and the aggravated assault rate is 4 per 1,000 per year. This means, what this means is that the vast majority of Americans are not inclined to hurt anyone. Some estimates say that 2 million Americans are victims of violent crimes. Stand by. Some estimates are that 2 million Americans are victims of violent crimes every year, a tragic, staggering number, perhaps an all-time record rate of violent crime. But there are almost 300 million Americans, which means that the odds of being a victim of violent crime is considerably less than 1 in 100 at any given year. Furthermore, since many violent crimes are committed by repeat offenders, the actual number of violent citizens is considerably less than 2 million. Thus, there is a paradox. And we must grasp both ends of the situation. We may be well in the most violent times in history, but violence is still remarkably rare. This is because most citizens are kind, decent people who are not capable of hurting each other except by accident or under extreme provocation. They are sheep. I mean nothing negative by calling them sheep. To me, it is like the pretty blue robin's egg. Inside, it is soft and gooey, but someday it will grow into something wonderful. But the egg cannot survive without its hard blue shell. Police officers, soldiers, and other warriors are like that shell, and someday the civilization they protect will grow into something wonderful. For now, though, they need warriors to protect them from the predators. Then there are the wolves, the old war veteran said, and the wolves feed on the sheep without mercy. Do you believe there are wolves out there who will feed on you, will feed on the flock without mercy? He asked. You better believe it. There are evil men in this world, and they are capable of evil deeds. The moment you forget that or pretend it is not so, you become a sheep. There is no safety in denial. Then there are sheepdogs, he went on, and I am a sheepdog. I live to protect the flock and confront the wolf. If you have no capacity for violence, then you are a healthy, productive citizen, a sheep. If you have the capacity for violence and no empathy for your fellow citizen, then you have defined an aggressive psychopath of a wolf. But what if you have the capacity for violence and a deep love for your fellow citizen? What do you have then? A sheepdog, a warrior, someone who is walking the hero's path, someone who can walk into the heart of darkness, into the universal human phobia, and walk out unscathed. Let me expand on this, the older soldier's excellent model of the sheep, wolves, and sheepdogs. We know that the sheep live in denial. That is what makes them sheep. They do not want to believe that there is an evil in the world. They can't accept the fact that fires can happen, which is why they have fire extinguishers, fire sprinklers, fire alarms, fire exits throughout their kids' schools. But many of them are outraged at the idea of putting an armed police officer in their kid's school. Our children are thousands of times more likely to be killed in a serious or seriously injured by school violence than fire, but the sheep's only response to the possibility of violence is denial. The idea of someone coming to kill or harm their child is just too hard, so they chose the path of denial. The sheep generally do not like the sheepdog. He looks a lot like the wolf. He has fangs and the capacity for violence. The difference, though, is that the sheepdog must not, cannot, and will not ever harm the sheep. Any sheepdog who initially harms the lowliest little lamb will be punished and removed. The world cannot work any other way, at least not in its representative democracy or a republic such as ours. Still, the sheepdog disturbs the sheep. He is a constant reminder that there are wolves in the land. They would prefer that he didn't tell them where to go or give them traffic tickets or stand in the ready at our airports, camouflage fatigues, holding an M16. The sheep would rather much have the sheepdog cash in his fatigue, spray paint himself white, and go, bah, until the wolf shows up. Then the entire flock tries desperately to hide behind one lowly sheepdog. The students, the victims at Columbine High School, were big, tough high school students, and under ordinary circumstances, they would not have had the time of day for a police officer. They were not bad kids. They just had nothing to say to a cop. When the school was under attack, however, the SWAT teams were clearing the rooms and hallways. The officers had to physically peel those clinging, sobbing kids off of them. This is how the little lambs feel about their sheepdog when the wolf is at the door. Here is how the sheep and the sheepdog think differently. The sheep pretend the wolf will never come, but the sheepdog lives for that day. After the attacks on September 11, 2001, most of the sheep, that is, most citizens in America, said, "Thank God I wasn't one of those on the plains." The sheepdogs, the warriors, they say, "Dear God, I wish I could have been on one of those planes. Maybe I could have made a difference." When you are truly transformed into a warrior and have truly invested yourself into warriorhood, you want to be there. You want to be able to make a difference. This is a quote from Edmund Burke. "There is no safety for honest men except by believing all possible evil of evil men." Here's the point I'm trying to emphasize, especially to the thousands of police officers and soldiers I speak to each year. In nature, the sheep, real sheep, are born as sheep. Sheepdogs are born that way, and so are wolves. They didn't have a choice. But you are not a critter. As a human being, you can be whatever you want to be. It's a conscious moral decision. If you want to be a sheep, then you can be a sheep, and that's okay, but you must understand the price you pay. When the wolf comes, you and your loved ones are going to die if there's not a sheepdog there to protect you. If you want to be a wolf, you can be one, but the sheepdogs are going to hunt you down, and you will never have rest, safety, trust, or love. But if you want to be a sheepdog and walk the warrior's path, then you must make a conscious and moral decision every day to dedicate, equip, and prepare yourself to thrive in that toxic, corrosive moment when the wolf comes knocking at the door. It is denial that turns people into sheep. They're psychologically destroyed by combat because their only defense is denial, which is the counterproductive and destructive, resulting in fear, helplessness, and horror when the wolf shows up. Denial kills you twice. It kills you once at the moment of truth When you're not physically prepared, you didn't bring your gun, you didn't train. Your only defense was wishful thinking. Hope is not a strategy. Denial kills you a second time because even if you do physically survive, you're psychologically shattered by your fear, helplessness, and horror at your moment of truth. Gavin DeBecker puts it like this in Fearless, his superb post 9/11 book, which should be required reading for anyone trying to come to terms with our current world situation. Denial can be denial can be seductive, but it has an insidious side effect. For all those peace of mind deniers think that they get this, for all those peace of mind deniers think they get by saying it isn't so, the fall they take when faced with new violence is all the more unsettling. Denial is a save now, pay later scheme, a contract written entirely in small print, for in the long run, the denying person knows the truth on some level. And the warrior must strive to confront denial in all aspects of life and prepare himself for the day when evil comes. If you are a warrior who is legally authorized to carry a weapon and you step outside without that weapon, then you become a sheep, pretending that the bad man will not come today. No one can be on 24/7 for a lifetime. Everyone needs some downtime. But if you are authorized to carry a weapon and you walk outside without it, just take a deep breath and say to yourself, "Bah." In conclusion, this business of being a sheep or a sheepdog is not yes or no. It's not all or nothing, either or choice. It's a matter of degrees, a continuum. On one end is an abject, head-in-the-sand sheep, and on the other end is an ultimate warrior. Few people exist completely on one end or the other. Most of us live somewhere in between. Since 9/11, almost everyone in America took a step up that continuum away from denial. The sheep took a few steps towards accepting and appreciating their warriors, and the warriors started taking their job more seriously. The degree to which you move up that continuum away from sheephood and denial is the degree to which you and your loved ones will survive physically, psychologically, at your moment of truth. I read that and I said, that's me. So where are you? I'm a sheepdog. That's why I always push train, 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 train. Be prepared. I know not everybody can be like me or people like me, but maybe I can get you up the ladder of having your head in the sand and at least popping out and say, oh yeah, maybe I can at least move, instead of just sitting there waiting to be eaten up by the wolf. So ladies and gentlemen, I got a class today at 2 o'clock, license to carry class. It's not a certificate to say, ooh, wow, cool, I can carry a gun. It's the beginning process of defending yourself, your family, and your property. So if there's still room, if you wish to participate, it's 2 o'clock. It's $60 for the new person, $40 for a refresher course. Get there 10 minutes early. Give us a call here, 254-697-6633. We'll take and get you ready for the class. If you have any comments or questions, any things you want to talk about, we still got a little bit of time left, and you can call up on the show here, tell us what you think. Go ahead to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page, like us on Facebook, check out the YouTube channel at Aaron's Gun Shop, and got lots of training videos, lots of interviews, lots of good information there for you to use to help you on your way to becoming possibly a sheepdog and further away from a buh. So with that, we're going to take a break.
If you're planning a party for a wedding, birthday, anniversary, corporate event, or just to have fun, and you plan to serve alcohol, you need a bartender. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps Bartending Service is who you need to call. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps provides a complete portable bartending service. When you provide adult beverages to your guests, you want them served fast, correctly, and with flair. Aaron's High Cap Nightcaps can do that for you. TABC certified, professional, and with a complete bar setup, Aaron's can help make your social event one to remember for a long time. Call Aaron's now at 254-482-0557.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. We got about 10, 11 minutes left on the show. I just want to mention next week, it's going to be a great show, but we got a special guest coming in, and I just want to tell you a little bit about her because she's going to be doing something pretty unique. Her name is Susan Connolly, and she's been coming to the shop, and she's a great shot. She's competing. She's doing a great job. It's pretty wild to check her out and see how quickly she advanced. I mean, she was a good shooter anyway, but doing these competitions, just honed her in. But come to find out, she's a fantastic artist. Paints, all that kind of stuff. She's going to come on the show next week. And while I'm doing the show, she's going to do an oil portrait of me in less than 2 hours right here while we're doing it. So your host is going to be getting slapped with ink or paint or whatever. It's going to be a big circle with a slash in it and say no Matt, right? But anyway, it's going to be great. She's, let me tell you a little bit about her. She graduated from UT with a bachelor's in fine arts, works as a media specialist for a nonprofit organization in Harker Heights, graphic design, photography, web editing, digital communication. Off the job, she teaches a painting class on Mondays and Thursday nights from 6 to 8:30. She's been painting off and on since the fifth grade. And Friday night, it's dedicated to the practice of shooting skills. Ugh. She loves painting and photography, lives in Temple, and I saw her work, and it's fantastic. So we're going to have her on next Saturday. If you're interested in that kind of stuff, you can listen. I'm sure she'll give you her information on how to make contact with her. Okay. I've got about 10 minutes left. I'm going to knock out this gun training demo. And one other comment, too. Don't forget to check out my Facebook page and look at my son, Dylan, illustrating the need for the reason to have extra mags on you. Okay, gun training demo. Let's get personal and talk about our bodies. Places to conceal a weapon. There are a handful of things one must consider when wanting to conceal a handgun. So I'm going to read a list of them, and then we'll go over them when I'm done. I got 10 things here, and I'm sure there's plenty more. One, how big or small are you? How do you dress? What activities do you do? If you're a woman, are you large on top or more on the petite side? If you're a guy, do you have a pot belly or a flat one? Do you plan to carry it all the time or just sometimes? Do you wear a belt? Do you wear tight or loose fitting pants? Do you have wide shoulders or shoulders narrower than your hips? Basically, what I'm saying is guys, broad shoulders, a woman's more narrow. She's got the hourglass figure in most cases. Are you left or right-handed? And this applies specifically on this one. I'm directing that towards ankle holsters. First one here we had was, how big or small are you? Look, if you're huge, you can carry almost anything you want. But if you're petite, you're not going to be carrying a double stack, 5-inch Glock with a light or a laser on it, right? Yeah, okay, I'm sure you could pack it in there, right? So depending on your size and your hands too makes a big difference, but your size will determine what type of size. Now, how do you dress? This is a big one. I dress with somewhat form-fitting clothes, and I do that for one reason. I've come to learn when I'm hunting in the bush, or swamps and vines and all this kind of stuff, anything that's loose, it's going to snag on something. So when I wear my clothes in the form of preparedness, I like to obviously look good, but I want to have it in a manner that if I need to, I can be called to action, be comfortable, and clothes don't get stuck. Doorknobs or sticks, twigs, bush, whatever. So that's why I wear clothing. So it depends on how you dress. So since I wear closer fitting clothes, it limits me to some degree as to what type of gun I can wear. Now, if you're a person who wears baggy clothes, you just like the comfort of looser fitting clothes, it gives you the opportunity to wear a larger size handgun. So those are things you got to consider. What activities do you do? There's so many things I can go on this one, but let me address one in particular. Type of holster. If you're an officer, let's say, or you're a soldier, you need a holster that's going to lock that gun tight. No chance of it getting out. I mean, everybody wants a holster like that. But there are some that are more designed to make sure in rolling on the ground, jumping over things, so on and so forth, it's not going to come loose until you want it loose. Or you've got the strap of leather on your belt and you slip the gun in between your belt and that strap of leather. There's two different types. So what type of activities? If you're just walking down the street, you're going to the store, nothing really going to happen, your intention is not to be rolling in the grass, you might be able to wear a more relaxed type of holster. If you're a woman, if you're large on top and have, let's say, a button-up shirt and it kind of boxes you and it drapes down from your shoulders and your upper chest, it causes the shirt to have open spaces between it and your body, which allows you to possibly carry larger guns in those open spaces. Also, I design a holster that is worn on your bra in the front, in between where you're at there. And depending on your size, you can conceal a weapon there as well. So check, I've got them on my website too. Go to the products page. So depending on how large, if you're smaller on top and you wear baggy clothes, okay, you can probably carry a little bit bigger gun. But if you're a woman who's wearing more form-fitting clothing and you're not as big on top, you'll be limited on the size of the gun that you can carry on you up there. There's holsters for the side and the front, so on and so forth. All right, let's go to the guys. If you're a guy, do you have a pot belly or a flat one? Guys who may have pot bellies and they want to wear the gun on their hips may have a problem cross-drawing, so they may determine to carry it on their strong side. They can't reach over, or it may become uncomfortable for them if they're sitting down with it in their waist or whatever, or accessibility to the handgun. If you've got a flat stomach and you're more trimmed out, yeah, okay, you can wear it in different places. It may not be cumbersome to get to, but it may be more difficult to conceal it. So there's pros and cons. You got to keep that into consideration too. Do you plan to carry it all the time or just sometimes? If you're going to carry the gun all the time, which I recommend some form of gun, you might need one, two, or three different types of guns depending on what you're doing, if your budget allows it. But if you're going to carry it all the time and your budget doesn't allow it, you better get the gun that best fits you to carry it, not one that's cumbersome or awkward or uncomfortable, because then you won't have a tendency to wear it. Now remember this too, this was told to me a long time ago: guns are not comfortable. They are comforting, but they're not comfortable. So you try to find the gun that is the most comfortable for you. And for example, if I'm going to wear it in my waistline, I have a tendency to find guns that are single stacked as compared to double stack, because it's a little bit thinner. So if you plan to carry it all the time, make sure you have a gun that's comfortable. Do you wear a belt? If you wear a belt, you can wear hip holsters on the outside. You can wear a gun or a holster on the inside in your front, back, side. But you need a good, solid, sturdy belt. You can't have one of these parachute cord belts that have like one-third stretch factor to it. And you tighten up the belt and you start running and your gun starts flopping around. So if you're going to have a belt, you have options. But if you're going to have a belt on it, make sure that that belt is a good pistol belt. Do you have wide shoulders or narrow shoulders? This kind of goes back to a woman being large on top or small on top, but it can apply to anybody. If a guy's got very broad shoulders, let's just say a guy's got the V-shape, wide shoulders, and his V-shape goes down to his waist, is thinner, you've got that gap there. If he's large and wearing a baggy shirt, he can carry a large gun concealed from underneath his armpit down to his waist somewhere in that void where the shirt just hangs down. If you have narrow ones, then you have less options. You might need a smaller gun and a different way to carry. If you're skinny, the last thing I would recommend is a horizontal shoulder rig, because you're going to have a handle poking at your chest and a barrel of the gun poking at your back. I would highly recommend wearing a vertical shoulder rig if that's the type you choose. Are you left or right-handed? This applies to an ankle rig. I'm a left-handed shooter, and so looking at the shape of my body, my legs, my calves, I'm not going to wear the ankle holster on my left leg on the calf side, the outside part, because it's going to protrude. It's not going to go to the natural lines of my body. I'm going to wear it on the inside, but I'm going to wear it on my right leg. The ankle holster is on my right ankle. The gun is on the inside of my leg, and it conforms to the contours of my body, so I reach down, go across with my left hand, grab the gun on my right ankle, and pull it out. And the last thing was, if you wear tight pants or baggy pants, if you have tight pants wearing an ankle rig, it's going to be kind of hard to have access to the gun. And the other thing about an ankle rig is it's not a fast method. It's a great method for concealment, but it's not as fast as the shoulder rig or the belt. So there's a lot of these things to consider. We go over all this stuff in my classes, my advanced classes, my license to carry class, all these things. So if you want to check it out, get a group, go to aaronsgunshop.com, sign up on one of those, and we'll take care of you. Now, I've only got about a minute left, so with that time, I don't have a minute. I want to tell you that we enjoy it, love you, God bless, and keep your powder dry, and see you next week.